Now I share with you in the name of the God who made us, the Son who fixed us, and the Holy Spirit that keeps us under repair. Amen. Well, we've been on a journey of Lent that leads us eventually to Jerusalem and to Easter. And like most journeys, there are twists and turns, and there are ups and downs, and there are surprises, and there's same old, and there are forks in the road. And this morning we come to one of those forks, a fork that I'm not particularly excited about, because this fork means that I will be separating from you. I'll be going to Jerusalem by another road. The ancient rabbis used to say there are 49 roads to Jerusalem, and all of them do get to the same place. And so I'll rejoice with you come Easter, even though I'll not be here with you to do that. And further, I'm not going to be with you in the marches to come. Long before we came, Mackie and I decided that this should be probably our last march of being a visiting priest with you. For 19 years, we've been doing this, and Charlie asked me to fill in for him one Christmas, so I actually got to serve this congregation in two different years, but it was at Christmas and New Year's. So we consider it a 20-year journey with you, and it's time. It's time to let the younger hands and the more energetic vision and excitement that others can bring to this congregation. And we have rejoiced with you, and we have watched and seen and been a small part of how you have grown and developed and become more and more an island parish. But don't discount all the boat people. You're not here to see them pass through those gates, to sit in this beautiful park, to say their prayers in the church. And sometimes they leave a ball cap. I got one this week. Says Charlie, original cast. So even though I don't bear the name Charlie, I did receive from one of our boat people a new ball cap for work back home. Mackie and I are going through, as some of you have already or will be going through, that unique age determinations that happen to us and the changes that we need to make in our lives. So we have a lot on our plate in front of us this year. And the big decision is whether or not to leave the Cape and move closer to one of our boys. And so we have a lot on the road that we're taking, and I know you all have a full life too. And whenever we go down these roads of life, there is a tendency to get lost. I remember the first time I was driving down I-81, for those of you not familiar with the U.S., it's in the eastern part of the state, and it runs down through a valley of two mountain ranges, the Appalachian Mountains and the Allegheny Mountains. And I was driving along, I wasn't thinking about what I was doing, unfortunately. I was just kind of in that automatic mode of going down the road. And suddenly I decided, I think I'll check this new thing called Siri out and see what the directions say. So I turned it on, and sure enough, she came on, and she announced that I was on Interstate 482. And I said, that's not right. I'm on Interstate 81. Where is this coming from? And then I panicked, as sometimes we're wont to do, and that panic sometimes takes place at the worst times, because we're right in the middle of traffic. Well, I pulled off the interstate, sensibly, and asked and found out that indeed, in fact, I was on Interstate 81, but 482 had merged onto it, and so instead of giving me the interstate I thought I was on, she gave me this new interstate that was running coincidentally with 81. I turned Siri off, and I told Mackie, I'm not talking to that woman anymore. I've had it. And I never turned her back on for years. Many of you all were way ahead of me in terms of checking your Google Maps or whatever. And so as a consequence, One day I had to go into McLean, Virginia, which is across from Washington, D.C., and it happened to be at rush hour, and I wasn't quite sure of where I was going to go. And so I said, okay, I'll give you one more chance. One more chance and one more shot, and she took me directly to where I needed to go, to this retirement home to see an old friend. And she took me home a different way, because she understood the traffic had built up on this way that I had come, and this would be less traffic. The roads that we travel in life are very much like those actual roads we travel. And we all know that it's no fun being lost, and it's the panic sets in, and we are confused. And in our confusion, sometimes we do make false choices. The forks in our lives, well, we can't avoid them because they're ever with us. And we keep confidence in what the rabbi said, that there will be, in spite of our misgivings, there will be a road that takes us to Jerusalem. The Gospel of Luke is filled with three stories of lostness. And really, that's the point and the focus for today's gospel, is to come face to face with our lostness and the confusion and the discontinuity they cause in our lives. And when I read this story, and I have read it over and over this week, I've written four different sermons. I was showing Rachel, I finally quit when I put it on my drawing paper. The confusion comes when you have too much in front of you. I was reading this morning about Sanjay Gupta, who is a noted neurosurgeon and commentator on our news channels in the United States. He's a Hindu. I didn't realize that. He was born in the United States, grew up in Michigan, and has his medical degrees from there. But his family was from India. And he was invited by the Dalai Lama to come and meditate with him, just the two of them. And meditation and the Dalai Lama helping Sanjay Gupta understand some different forms of meditation that might be useful to him, one called analytical meditation versus a pinpoint kind of focus, was very, very helpful in understanding what we need to do about this kind of gospel. You need to pick. You need to pick the lost one. And there are three lost ones in this story. It's called the prodigal son. Unfortunately, most of us don't know what prodigal means. Just substitute extravagant, wasteful, if you will. But there are three characters in the story. There's a son who goes off to find himself, perhaps, or just to blow it all and have a great ball, a great fun. There's the other son who is home and resentful and wishes and is so disappointed in his father because good things didn't happen to him as he would think they should, given what has transpired with his other brother. And there's the father. The father is a prodigal. The father, in my estimation, kind of overdoes it a little bit, maybe. But he's so filled, and sometimes that happens to us. We get so filled with joy and happiness that anything around us is totally blocked out. And we don't realize that maybe our joy and the fun that we feel and the excitement we have is blocking somebody else because it's so self-centered. And that is the character of lostness, isn't it? We become so self-centered. It's all about me, the young brother says. It's all about me, the older brother that stayed home says. And in some sense, the father does the same thing, even though he's probably our favorite one in the story. Because we'd like to be welcomed home, wouldn't we? Which of those characters does sit with you the best and the easiest? Do you find that you're more like the one who's run off and for forsaken your family, and your family hasn't really taken you back, or at least to your mind's eye, you're not at home yet? Are you the other son who still has grudges, still can't put it aside, down deep inside? Somebody in the family is not right with you, and you're not right with them. You see, if you pick one of these characters rather than all three, you might, as the Dalai Lama was encouraging Santigupta, you might focus. And focusing is a piece of the journey that we share in that. Listen to the stories that we have and the stories that inform us as we move down the road. I was having a terrible time my sophomore year of college. I was the first person in my family to go to college, and I was told by my ninth grade algebra teacher that I shouldn't plan to go to college because I was not a strong enough student. And so, one day at church, the person in charge of the Sunday school program said, what college are you going to go to, John? And I said, I'm sorry, Miss Henry, I can't go to college. She said, why not? I said, well, nobody in my family's ever gone, and my teacher said I'm not college material. She said, that's ridiculous. She said, go in this room, and there's a bookshelf in this room, the library room of the church. And she said, those are all catalogs of colleges. She said, you pick three, and I'll help you make an application. Well, they were both right. It was good that I went to college, but I really wasn't college material. And I struggled so in my sophomore year, or in my freshman year, and into my sophomore year. And my advisor, Dr. Lowry, who really didn't have a doctorate, he came up education-wise in Arkansas during the Depression, but he was one of the wisest people on the whole faculty, even though he didn't have an earned doctorate. He called me out to the Quonset hut. We had repurposed Quonset huts from World War II. And they were out near the athletic field. So I went out there and sat with him. And Dr. Lowry, he had a wonderful way of giving a lecture. He would pull a chair up backwards, sit in, and begin to roll a cigarette. Anybody ever seen people roll a cigarette? You know, they put it in and all this kind of twitchy in. Well, he would do that every lecture. And he timed it so that just about the time it was time to light the cigarette, the bell rang. Perfect. Well, anyhow, he sat down, he started to roll a cigarette, and he said, Rice, I don't understand why you're having so much trouble. And I said, well, Dr. Lowry, I think the ninth grade teacher was right. I shouldn't be going to college. And he said, I can't believe it. You really believe her? Still? And I said, yes, sir. And he said, get out of here. You got to do some figuring out. And I walked out of that Quonset hut, still hear the crunch in the gravel that caught the water drop-offs from the roof. I can still hear and feel my foot crunching those rocks as I walked away, saying to myself, I am crazy. Why am I still believing that ninth grade teacher? And it was that moment when you really focus on the roads that you're on that really have the impact of showing you a better and more hopeful way. That's, I believe, what happened to the son who blew it all. I think that happened as well to the other son who was resentful, and it happened to the father. They all discovered that being extravagant in a good way, as opposed to a wasteful way, is the way things turn around. I encourage you for the rest of Lent in your journey. Dr. Lowry encouraged me. Go figure it out.